This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Joe Palca in Washington, and now we turn to baseball. Yesterday, in a phone call to Washington, D.C. Mayor Anthony Williams, Baseball Commissioner Bud Selig confirmed it. Next spring, the Montreal Expos will become Washington's first baseball team in more than three decades. Can you hear the cheers out there? Yes, I can hear. The deal still has to be approved by Washington's City Council, but Mayor Williams was optimistic enough to celebrate the news at a press conference. And at a campaign stop yesterday in Lake Elmo, Minnesota, Vice President Dick Cheney had this reaction.
A lot of folks in Washington would love to have a ball team again. And so I think this will be a great boon to the community. But I think it's a great development. It really is. And Washington's a great baseball town.
Cheney's latest comment brings up an interesting question. What exactly does it mean to be a good baseball town, or a great baseball town for that matter? We want listeners to weigh in on this. Let us know what you think makes a really great baseball town. Is it the fans, the ability to produce a winning franchise? Well, everybody loves a winner, so it's got to be something more than that. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us to help us with this question is Alan Schwartz, who writes a biweekly column for the New York Times about baseball. He joins us from member station KNPR in Las Vegas, Nevada. Good to have you back on the show.
Well, thank you very much.
So I guess I'm stopping myself right at the first hurdle and saying, you know, even teams that are great sometimes don't have a big draw, because I'm thinking the Oakland Athletics have, you know, been pretty good over the years, and you can almost always find a good seat available at the Oakland Coliseum.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that if you're going to try to answer the question of what makes a good baseball town, I think you have to consider two different things from completely different angles. You have to ask, would the fan base be excited about baseball? For instance, you know, in Dallas, it's a football town. There's nothing you can do about it. It's not going to be a baseball town, certainly for another 20 or 50 years. But, you know, other towns like Washington might have the fan base in order to appreciate the game, embrace the game, and love the game. Of course, they have their Redskins. But more importantly, and this is the harder thing for fans to appreciate, is the question of the corporate environment. Are you going to get the luxury box seats? Are you going to get the sponsorship that you need in order to compete economically with the other franchises? And that's something that, you know, it sounds awfully cold-hearted, but it's desperately important.
So does Washington have that? It would seem like it. I mean, there's a lot of money and power floating around in this burg.
Sure. I think so. Of course, the media market is strong, and if they build that new stadium, you know, that facility will certainly be economically, advantageous to the franchise. I think, of course, the concern with Washington is the type of folks who do live there, in that they don't stay for very long, a lot of them. It is a somewhat, you know, itinerant fan base. Not to say that there aren't people who live in Washington all the time and stay in the, you know, Bethesdas and Rockvilles and Northern Virginias. But the point is that a lot of folks might not be staying for that long. And if they don't, are they just going to be rooting for their Dodgers or their Mets when they come to town? Are they going to be Senators fans or Grays fans or whatever the team is called? So this is going to be a very interesting experiment. And one thing to remember is Major League Baseball, frankly, didn't want to do this. Remember, they wanted to contract the Expos, but they weren't allowed to 3 years ago by the Players Union. So I don't think anyone is jumping up and down saying that Washington is the perfect baseball town. I think it needs to prove itself.
Well, we'll wait and see. Let's see what our listeners think about what's the perfect or a perfect baseball town, and go to Mike. He's on the road in North Carolina. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm okay.
I've got a few opinions on this coming from Boston. I think I'm a pretty decent fan. I have been all my life, and I think it's an excellent sports town, and it's an excellent baseball town. But I do have some experience in Washington, D.C. I have a lot of friends that live there, and I think it's an excellent baseball town. I mean, just aside from the historical aspect of the place and the fact that it's had baseball for a good 70 years, albeit they lost a couple of their teams, once to Minnesota and then once to Texas, just talking with my friends in D.C., they are very excited. I think when you're talking about the sponsorships, I think I was listening to you guys talking about the corporate involvement in sports, especially in the D.C. area. I think it's an excellent place. I think it's you can't lose.
Okay, Mike, thanks for that. Let's see what Ted, he's also on the road in Wisconsin. What's your take on this?
Hi, I'm originally from Brooklyn, New York, a Brooklyn native, and what makes I say Brooklyn still a great baseball town, even though it had its soul ripped out in 1957 when the
You're still sore about that.
What's that?
You're still sore about that.
I mean, oh, no, not at all.
Oh, okay, good.
It's interesting. I was born in 1965, well after Walter O'Malley perpetrated his misdeed against the citizenry of Brooklyn. But what makes Brooklyn a great baseball town, well, I would say what made Brooklyn a great baseball was the identification between the players and the people of the community. The people of Brooklyn, a very working class borough, looked to really identified with the players of the team. And there was a real sense of common community between the team and the people of Brooklyn. It's been transferred a little bit to the Mets, but not nearly to the same degree that it existed when the Dodgers were in Brooklyn. Now, if you know in Washington, whether that same base is there to be able to have that same identification of the history of Washington and the team, I don't know.
Well, okay, there's another opinion. Thanks, Ted, for that. I wonder if I can turn to you for a second, Alan Schwartz, and ask, maybe the question to be asking people is, does Baltimore have enough of a baseball town to continue to support the Orioles? I mean, they've got this great new stadium, and for a number of years the stadium was packed, but they've turned into a mediocre team, and they're a much smaller market. Is this a bigger threat for Baltimore than it is a promise for D.C.?
Well, I don't think you can mistake Baltimore's slide in the standings for any sort of viability as a business. We can't forget that those things are very separate. Baltimore is a bad team because they've made bad baseball decisions, not because their market isn't strong enough. I think, of course, there is a danger of diluting the Maryland-Virginia market in terms of putting a team in Washington. And, of course, Peter Angelos, the owner of the Orioles, has made that very clear. But I think it's interesting that, you know, the callers just now, one talked about Washington being a great town, one talked about Brooklyn being a great town. You know, those cities both failed in Washington twice in their attempts to keep Major League Baseball thriving. You know, Brooklyn, for all its eulogies of being a wonderful, you know, team, of course, those are eulogies now offered from people who, of course, spent their youths in Brooklyn. And I think we all remember our youths pretty fondly. Ebbets Field, you know, as much as we love to remember it, was a dump. I mean, it was a terrible baseball stadium. That's why they left.
Well, the polo grounds,
in large part.
The polo grounds weren't any great shakes, unless you like to run a long way in center field.
I mean, operating a team is something more than just having fans who care. You need to have fans who pay a lot of money for tickets. You need to have fans who watch on television and allow your club to get good, you know, money for its media contracts. And you need to have the industry and the corporate culture that allows you to derive those millions and millions and millions of dollars from your stadium. Unfortunately, it doesn't come down to how beloved the players or logo are among the populace. It is a drastically complicated business proposition. And as fondly as we remember the Dodgers and the Senators, they left for a reason.
Well, I have an email here from Lisa in St. Louis who says, St. Louis is the best baseball time. Just ask Mark McGwire, Larry Walker, Ozzie Smith, Sam Usual. We enjoy our baseball even when we aren't on the winning end of it. We're picked to finish last or third in our division, and now we are the Central Division winners. St. Louis rocks baseball. So, there's somebody who's in taste. Yeah, go ahead.
I have to agree. I mean, in all seriousness, St. Louis, within baseball, has the reputation of being the best baseball town. They are the most loyal fans. They are the most supportive fans. And I mean that both emotionally and financially. They're building the new stadium. Players love playing in St. Louis. That's why you get the Scott Rolands and the Mark McGwires playing there. They are in very good shape. They also have a very good general manager. St. Louis is rocking right now. That guy's not kidding.
All right. Well, Alan Schwartz, thanks very much.
My pleasure.
Alan Schwartz writes a column on baseball statistics for the New York Times and is author of the book The Numbers Game, Baseball's Lifelong Fascination with Statistics. He joined us from member station KNPR in Las Vegas, Nevada. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. As the Montreal Expos prepare for the move to Washington, D.C., we take a look back at an important and often overlooked moment in Montreal's history. On April 18, 1946, Jackie Robinson stepped up to bat for his first game as the first black player on the roster of a team associated with the major leagues, and that team was the Montreal Royals. Joining us now to talk about this incredible moment in history is NPR's own Scott Simon, the author of Jackie Robinson and the Integration of Baseball. Scott joins us here in Studio 3A. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks very much, Joe.
So how did Jackie Robinson end up playing in Montreal?
Well, he was signed by the Brooklyn Dodgers, and there are people who will tell you that the fact that the Brooklyn Dodgers had the nerve to go ahead and sign him, alone among major league franchises at that point, was not... We absolutely fed into the fact that Montreal was their prime farm club, as we call it in the minor leagues. The Boston Red Sox had given Jackie Robinson and a couple of other Negro League stars a sham tryout 5 months before, and Joe Cronin, who later became president of the American League, very famously said, "Great ball player, too bad he's the wrong color," and told interviewers over the years that the Red Sox couldn't even contemplate bringing Jackie Robinson onto their club. Not to mention I think it's safe to say the famous reputation that the Red Sox themselves had among racists as an environment, a very antithetical environment for African American ball players. But their principal minor league club was in Louisville, so Montreal was considered about the perfect environment in which to bring up an African American star. And Branch Rickey cast a role in history for Montreal, and Montreal, the city, enjoyed living up to it. It was really a great moment in baseball history.
So Montreal was more accepting? This was going to be a friendlier environment
We shouldn't... obviously, there was racism in Montreal. They had been riven by anti-Semitic riots in particular during World War II, I think it's safe to say. But Montreal considered itself a little bit more progressive and urban environment than a lot of other American cities, certainly on the subject of race and ethnicity, because it was already then a mixed culture. They cultivated Americans like expat jazz musicians were welcomed in Paris. They styled themselves that way. I think there was also some feeling that, again, they rose to the occasion, that this was an opportunity that was being served up. They didn't have to worry about some of the old social attitudes of the American South. And in the International League, of course, you also had other options that were available, like Louisville, but also Toronto. But there was a link also between Montreal and Brooklyn at that point. There was a large politically progressive Jewish community in Montreal, and many of those people had relatives in Brooklyn.
So what was the first game for Jackie Robinson like? Describe it to us.
Oh, my God. It was the game against Jersey City?
Yes. Is that the first home game, I presume?
That was actually played on the road in Jersey City.
Oh, okay.
But it was big. It was certainly big news in Montreal. If you want to ask about the first game in Montreal, he went 4-for-4.
Wow.
It was a wonderful opening day. And it was famous at that particular time because, of course, the eyes of the baseball world were on him. And he performed so expertly. 1946 was an amazing year for him. I wrote down the statistics. He batted .349. The Montreal Royals won the pennant there in the International League by 18 games, which is an extraordinary range. And we're talking about a foreshortened, of course, minor league season. And who should they confront in what was then called the Little League World Series, which was the championship of the International League, but the Louisville Colonels, the Boston Red Sox team that...
Sure.
Couldn't have him. Now, some of the Louisville Colonels threatened to boycott the Little League, the Little World Series. They said that they wouldn't play against a black ball player. And I must say, to their credit, the Boston Red Sox said, well, if you don't play against the Montreal Royals and Jackie Robinson, you're not going to be the Red Sox affiliate. So they had to play. As a matter of fact, they won the first couple of games, but then they were on the road in Louisville, but they came back to Montreal. And it was just extraordinary. People talk about that moment in baseball history. Jackie Robinson was a brilliant fielder. He hit brilliantly. I believe he batted in 9 runs in the last couple of games. And very famously, he was carried off the field at Lorimer Downs when they had finally won the Little World Series. And there was a sports writer then at the time named Sam Moulton, in fact, who was an expat American, who wrote a famous dispatch, if I might quote from it. When the crowd carried Jackie Robinson off their shoulders, off the field on their shoulders, it said it was probably the only day in history that a black man ran from a white mob with love instead of lynching on its mind. And the Montreal club, and I apologize in advance for my bad French pronunciation to my French wife, but the Montreal fans were chanting, "Il a gagné ses épaulettes," he has earned his stripes. Because, of course, since he had that brilliant year in Montreal, it meant that Jackie Robinson was headed for the Brooklyn Dodgers and the major leagues.
Thanks, Scott. Just quickly, you looking forward to baseball in D.C.? Doesn't matter to you.
Doesn't matter to me. I'm a Cub fan, and honestly, it pains me to see baseball leave Montreal. Baseball has a long history in Montreal, as long as any other American city. It's a great town. I think it was honestly misserved by baseball. I would be much happier if they'd stayed in Montreal.
Thanks, Scott. Scott Simon is the host of NPR's Weekend Edition Saturday. He's also the author of Jackie Robinson and the Integration of Baseball. He joined us here in Studio 3A. In Washington, I'm Joe Palca, NPR News.